And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Season of Hope, was written by Joseph Mendel and is presented in observance of the holiday of Sukkot, the Festival of the Tabernacles.
God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living soul, the first fruit of the earth in the harvest of creation. This is a story of seed time and harvest, of the toil and pain and wonder, of growth and unfolding. A song for the season of hope. The child is the seed, to be nourished with the breath of life, and the harvest is a living soul.
Have you read the paragraph to yourself, Andy? Andy?
Yeah, I read it.
Yes, I read it.
Yes, I read it. Miss Newman, why do I have to stay after school? I didn't do nothing.
I didn't do anything.
Anything? Why, Miss Newman?
I'm not punishing you, Andy. During school hours, I can't give you all the help you need with your reading.
I work after school, Miss Newman, and my boss said...
I'm sure he'll make allowances.
Please let me go now. It's important.
I know it is. But when you graduate from junior high school next year, it's also important for you to be able to read and understand the books you'll study in high school. Now, Andy, read the paragraph aloud. The earth...
The earth has only a single...
Satellite.
Satellite. Revolving in a... In an orbit around it.
Good. Now, read the sentence again. And then tell me in your own words what it says.
The earth has only a single I can't read it, and I don't know what it means.
You can if you keep trying.
I can't. It ain't my fault if I'm not smart enough.
You mustn't say that, Andy. You're having some difficulty with reading, that's all.
Yeah, I'm in the eighth grade, and I can't read a fifth grade book.
How do you know it's a fifth grade reader?
I can count the little stars on a cover, can't I?
Pupils are not supposed to know what that means. You see, you're pretty smart after all.
What are you laughing about?
I'm sorry, Andy. You know I wasn't laughing at you. Now, will you read the sentence again?
What for? Why can't you leave me alone, Miss Newman? Why do you want to make me more than I am?
It's no good, Mr. Bronson. You made a mistake in hiring me.
Well, that may be, Miss Newman.
Oh?
Well, shouldn't I agree with you?
It's 4 months since I started. 4 months that I've been working to improve their reading. Mr. Bronson, I see very little improvement in the class.
That's a good sign.
It is.
In you, I mean. A good teacher is usually impatient with herself, but not with her pupils.
At first, I thought I was expecting too much of these boys and girls. Take Andy, for example. His records show that he's more than 3 years retarded in reading, and his intelligence test score is well below normal. Maybe it's all he's capable of doing.
Well, that's what you thought at first, you said.
But the intelligence test is based on reading. And if he can't read, then how can he get a high score? Don't you see?
I see. I'm glad that you do.
I spoke to Andy's guidance counselor. It was just after we gave all the children the nonverbal IQ test. The kind that doesn't depend on reading. Do you know, Mr. Bronson, Andy's intelligence, and other children's too, is distinctly above the norm for his age.
But he still has difficulty with reading.
And history and math and everything else. It's not because his intelligence is low. It isn't. But because of a lack of... a lack of background. I mean, well, in Andy's reader, we came across the words Milky Way. Mr. Bronson, he didn't know what it is. He never saw it.
Well, New York is a big city with street lights and house lights. It's pretty hard to find a spot dark enough so you can see the Milky Way.
I know, but...
You were born and brought up in New York City, weren't you, Julie?
Yes, I was.
And tell me, when did you first see the Milky Way?
I can tell you exactly. I was 11 and a half.
Oh.
My father, I asked him about it. And the next evening, he took me in the subway, and we went to the last stop. And then we took a streetcar to one of the little towns. We got out in the dark, and I looked up. And I discovered the Milky Way.
But you see, Julie, Andy's father never did that with his son. It would never occur to him to do it.
The poor kid.
He's not the only one.
I suppose not. In this neighborhood.
Julie, I've been a teacher and a principal in the school throughout the city. And in neighborhoods where families are well off financially, I've seen children who made me think, the poor kids, their parents provide an elegant apartment, but not the Milky Way. Handsome clothes, but not books. Money, but no guide for developing what's inside them. Julie, any child who is deprived of a portion of the world to which he's entitled... is a poor child.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
I had to find out, didn't I, if I'd been mistaken in you.
I guess you can't teach children reading or anything else for that matter, unless at the same time you broaden the world for them.
Ah, you've made another discovery, Julie. The Milky Way long ago and now...
I know I must sound young and immature to you.
Don't be so serious, Julie. I didn't mean it that way. Only that our school has been selected to participate in the Board of Education's Higher Horizons program. And one of the main objectives of the program is what you've just described. You see?
I see that you have to work not only with the children, but also with their families.
And that's a problem.
Yes, it is. I've been telling my pupils that their parents are welcome to come at any time to talk to me.
And very few have come.
None at all.
The problem has a solution, at least temporarily.
I haven't found it.
Oh, it's very simple, Julie. If parents don't come to see you, you can go to see them.
Yes,
Mrs. Smith? I'm Andy's teacher.
Oh, Miss Newman. Andy told me you were coming today. And here I am still sweeping the floors.
May I come in?
Oh, of course. I don't know what I'm thinking of. I'll just take my apron off. I'm sorry you caught me like this.
Oh, it's all right, Mrs. Smith. I understand.
With four children in a small apartment, I'm always cleaning up, it seems to me. Oh, that's the best chair right there. I hope it's not serious, Miss Newman. About Andy, I mean.
Well, I did want to talk to you about him.
Oh, Andy told me you wanted to see me. What with laundry and marketing, cooking, I just didn't seem to be able to get away.
I know it's hard for you. That's why I came.
Oh, it's nice of you. But, you know, the school never sent for me before. My Andy is a good boy, Miss Newman.
Of course he is.
And my husband and me, we teach our children to behave the right way. Andy never gave no teacher trouble before.
It's not that at all, Mrs. Smith.
He knows he's got to behave himself in school, even if he's not smart. Well, it's true, isn't it?
How do you know it's true?
Well, he always shows me his report card. I see his school marks.
Mrs. Smith, Andy could improve his school marks. He could learn more if he had the right kind of help.
From me?
From you and from his father.
I don't know. Look, I'll tell you, Miss Newman, I'm not one to try to fool anybody. We're plain people, me and my husband. We don't put on airs. You might as well know that we never had much schooling, neither of us. I don't see that we can help Andy with his books.
There are other ways of helping, maybe even more important.
I suppose.
Like seeing that he does his homework and studying the best he can.
Oh, but he does. Right here on this very table.
But why not in his own room?
His own room? The two younger boys are in with him. They go to bed early. This is a nice big table, and my husband keeps the television down real low.
You mean that Andy works 6 feet from a television screen?
Well, there's no other place.
At least his father can turn it off while Andy is studying.
You're a young thing, aren't you?
I don't see what that has to do with anything that I'm saying.
Oh, no offense, miss. Only you don't understand how a man gets set in his habits.
No, I don't.
My husband's a hard-working man. A laborer for a construction company when there's work. When he gets home, he just rests, watching television. When he's out of work, he watches television to keep from worrying, for a couple of hours anyway. I figure he's entitled to his relaxation.
Isn't Andy entitled to anything? He has his work, too. And it's important.
It seems to me, young lady, that you're making a big fuss about a little thing.
Don't you see, Mrs. Smith? It's not only that Andy needs a quiet place to work. Even more than that, he needs your encouragement, your belief in him, yours and his father's, if he's to grow up as he should.
You teach him his schoolwork, Miss Newman.
That's just what I'm trying to do.
Fine. Leave the rest to us. It's not your concern. We're his parents.
I am concerned, Mrs. Smith. I'm his teacher.
He that teaches his neighbor's son is as if he had created him. And to create is to change, to disturb the hardened ground long unchanged.
Hey, that was good stew, Laura.
Sure was, Ma.
Oh, I'm glad you like my cooking, both of you.
Well, Wednesday night. Yeah. Hey. Hey, what'd you do that for, Laura? Why'd you turn off the television?
I've been wanting to do it for 2 weeks, George, ever since...
Look, I've been watching the Wednesday night fights for 2 years now. What's come over you all of a sudden?
Well, I wasn't going to tell you, but I've been thinking about what she said.
Who?
Andy's teacher. I think she's right.
Oh, so that's it. An old maid school teacher comes snooping around here, and I have to...
She's not old, Pa.
Oh, another county heard from, huh? No teacher's going to tell me what to do in my own house.
Well, don't turn on the television, George. At least not till you hear me out.
Okay. I'm listening.
Well, the boy can't do his homework with that thing blasting at him.
He's been doing it that way ever since he's been in school.
But not the right way, not the best he can.
It's good enough.
No. George, he's improved so much that the school is giving him a chance to try something. Andy, give me the book, the one you got a few days ago.
Here, Ma.
Yeah. Look, George. Algebra.
What's so special about algebra?
Well, look at the book and see for yourself. Go on, take it. It won't bite. Andy can't start in the academic course in high school without algebra. And if he's not in the academic course, he can't go to college.
He's a kid in junior high. What's the sense of talking about college? How do you know he'll even be able to finish high school?
You listen to me, George Smith. He's entitled to try.
Oh, I heard you all right. I heard you filling the boy's head with ideas that are too big for him.
Pa.
Building him up for a big letdown. Now, I've got something to say.
Pa, the boy.
What do you want?
Twisting the cover of the book.
It's no more use to you than it is to me. Here's your algebra book.
Take all your books, Andy. If the boys are asleep, the light won't wake them. You can work on your bed.
Wait. I guess I shouldn't have done that.
It's all right, Pa. The book wasn't hurt.
Oh, that's good. Andy, maybe I didn't mean only the book.
I know, Pa.
Do you?
I'm glad, boy. Real glad. Well, so I won't watch the fights tonight. Tell me, Andy, you're gonna have algebra homework every Wednesday night?
Now, class, do you remember what day this is?
Sure, Miss Newman, it's Thursday.
That's right, Andy. But it's a special Thursday. Today, when you return from lunch, you do not go to your regular classroom.
We know. We meet in the main hall downstairs.
Right. We'll travel to the theater together. But if for some reason you should get separated, remember where you're going.
46th Street and Broadway.
Right. Now, how many of you have ever seen a real live play in a theater? No one? Oh, well, then let's talk a little about how to be a good audience.
Enough is enough, Laura. First a Broadway show, and now...
They got $4 tickets for less than a dollar.
All right, it was a big bargain,
but... real bargain, George. Besides, that was 3 weeks ago.
Every week, it seems to me, there's something else. The planetarium, the Museum of Art, the opera...
It was only the dress rehearsal, Pop.
Don't get technical.
All those places the school took them, they're all free.
Laura, how far do you think you can stretch a dollar?
Far enough to let Andy buy a book. The school got the publisher to sell to the kids at cost.
Another bargain. If you mourn, we'll all be broke.
George, you know, I was looking around the apartment the other day. We've got television, a tablecloth on the table, and doodads in the china closet.
Well, what's wrong with all that? Why are you turning up your nose?
No books, George. What kind of a house is it without a book?
Oh, after all these years, you're going highbrow on me?
Oh, don't be a smart aleck. Maybe it's too late for me, but it's not too late for Andy. And we got to think ahead to high school, maybe college.
Oh, not that again.
Oh, I don't know why I'm arguing with you. Andy can buy his own books. He works after school. He pays his way.
And who buys his food and clothes? Pays his way.
Then what's he working for?
Because every little bit helps.
Fine. Then his little bit is going to buy him some books. Drink your coffee, George.
Still too hot.
Then drink it hot. I want to get done with the dishes.
What are you rushing me for?
Because I'm in a hurry, that's why.
Hey, why are you all dressed up? And Andy, too, with his suit and white shirt. Hey, what's going on?
Go on. Tell your father, Andy.
There's a symphony concert tonight, Pa.
Well?
It ends kind of late at night. So the school got extra tickets, in case any kid wanted to go with an older person.
So you're going to the symphony concert, Laura, huh?
I am. Just as soon as I finish the dishes. Unless you'd like to go with them.
I guess you think this is another one of those, bargains.
George, I think you'd better tell me what's worrying you.
Don't sit down, Ma. Not now. We gotta go.
Look, you go down and wait for me in the street. I won't be long.
But, Ma...
Do what I tell you, Andy. You live with a man for so many years, and you understand him, and then something happens, and you realize that you've been listening to what he says, not what he means. George... You've been talking about how much everything costs. That's not what's troubling you, is it?
Laura, did I ever count pennies when the kids were sick? The best doctors, Laura. You know that.
I know.
Did I ever buy myself a shirt or a pair of shoes if you or the kids needed clothes? No, Laura, it ain't the dough.
I only want what's best for Andy.
Don't I want the same? But it's no good stuffing his head with poetry and algebra.
George.
With pictures in the museum, with concerts and opera.
George, in my whole life, I never went to a concert.
You never wanted to go.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't even know enough to want to go. Do Did you ever see a play on the stage with live people instead of shadows on a screen? You never wanted to. But Andy is learning what to want.
It's no good, I tell you. He ain't a rich man's son. Why, he ought to be thinking about earning a living in a few years, not getting a taste for things he can't have. He's only piling up trouble. Laura, you gotta stop putting big ideas in his head.
What makes you think I got ideas to give my son?
No. It's not you. It's a school. I'm losing pay every minute I'm here, Mr. Bronson, so I'll get right to the point.
Yes, of course, Mr. Smith.
Now, you're the principal of this school, and I want you to do something. Oh, and you too, Miss...
Newman.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to do whatever I can for Andy.
Okay. Then will you please leave him alone? I'm sorry, but... Well, maybe I'm not being very polite, but I have to say it.
Mr. Smith. A teacher doesn't do her job by leaving her pupils alone.
Look, I know you mean well, but you just don't understand people like us.
There's nothing so terribly different about you.
Yeah, that's right, miss. We're plain, ordinary people, struggling for a living, trying to get along from one day to the next. Don't make it harder for my son.
We're trying to make it easier for him.
How, Mr. Bronson? By pumping him full of ideas about college? Look, I know my boy. He's a good, decent kid, but he's not smart. Not college smart, that is.
You're wrong about Andy. I can let you see the records of his test grades.
Never mind. I see his report cards.
Then you've seen how they've improved in the past 6 months.
Sure. At that rate, he'll be a genius in 100 years.
He doesn't have to be a genius. Mr. Smith, our Higher Horizons program is for boys and girls like your son Andy who have to catch up on what they've missed.
Look. A person is born the way he is. You can't catch up on everything.
Maybe not. But we want to find out as accurately as possible what each child's nature is. And then the Higher Horizons program provides more teachers so we can have smaller classes. Special teachers for reading and arithmetic so children can catch up faster. More guidance counselors, more psychologists.
Mr. Bronson, I'm trying to explain. I mean, it's no good pushing Andy about college.
He doesn't have to go to college. But he has a right to learn all that he can to the best of his ability. If we're pushing it all, that's what it's for. Later on, if he wants to and can meet the competition for college...
Yeah, you give the boy ideas and you leave him. How's he going to earn a living? What kind of a job's he going to get, a kid like Andy?
Whatever he aspires to. If he has the ability for it.
No, Mr. Bronson, maybe you run a good school. Not for Andy, but for the kids of fancy penthouse apartments on Park Avenue with oil paintings on the walls, with tickets to Broadway shows and the opera. That's not Andy's world.
It's the same world. But you don't see all of it if your eyes aren't wide open.
Maybe it's better not to know what you're missing. I'll tell you what I want, Mr. Bronson. I want Andy to get along and be satisfied. You're trying to make him more than he is.
Aren't you?
Well, no, I... What do you mean?
Well, that's what parents are for. That's what schools are for. To make children more than they are. To make them all that they're capable of being.
The story ends for Andy and for many others like him, with his eyes open and horizons broadened, and the freedom to become what he is. For him, for all the children, are the words of the psalm.
The stone which the builder rejected is become as the cornerstone.
The fruit is more than the seed, and the harvest is a living soul.
This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it.
Rejoice in a harvest of hope, in this, the season of hope.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Zev Zahavi, spiritual leader of Congregation Zichron Ephraim, New York City, New York.
Today's story portrays an admirable attempt to nourish the culturally starved soul of a youngster. As the product of meager home surroundings, this boy's cultural development was pathetically neglected. Through the efforts of the school and a young, sincere, dedicated teacher, the boy and his family are set upon the road towards cultural improvement. The story concludes on the happy note of apparent salvation. In my mind, there arises the specter of a greater tragedy in American life. It involves many thousands of American youngsters who are exposed to the danger of a permanently damaged soul as a result of neglect and apathy on the part of their parents. Perhaps in your own home, there may be a child for whom we may truly shed tears because the opportunity for harvesting this youngster's soul has been ignored. I speak of the need to harvest the child's true soul, the religious spirit, the spark of godliness which may be kindled within the heart of every human being. The great tragedy today is not the cultural neglect of the younger generation. Rather is it the utter disregard of their religious development. The problem is not the lack of appreciation for Bach or Brahms or Beethoven, but the lack of identification with Moses and David and Hillel. Rarely need we shed tears for youngsters who are not acquainted with drama, ballet, or art, but we should certainly be concerned for a younger generation whose parents omitted a knowledge of prayer and Bible and religious tradition. The Sicko's message glorifies the bountiful harvest after laborious seeding and painstaking care. If you would enjoy the harvest of significant fulfillment in the lives of your youngsters, then take to heart the responsibility of providing a proper religious training for their soul. Now that the back-to-school season is at hand, there is still time to enroll your youngster in religious school. Be kind to the young and provide for their religious training because the beginning of all wisdom is the fear of God.
Thank you, Dr. Zahavi. Our Eternal Light drama today, Season of Hope, was written by Joseph Mendel and was presented in observance of the holiday of Sukkot, the Festival of the Tabernacles. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Fran Spanier, Kerry Mark Joels, Joseph Bell, Bryna Rayburn, and Ralph Camargo. The narrator was Roger DeCoven. This is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.